This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Hello everyone, this is Clint Locklear with Trapping Across America. I've been out playing TV actor today, I guess, doing trapping tips for Freedom Brands Outdoors that comes on all the time. And I've got Alan Probst, and I told him we wouldn't finish the last trapping tip unless he agreed to do a radio show since he was down here. So he's being held hostage, and we're going to talk about what I have no earthly idea, except he's starting a new store, and I was amazed. So if you're going to be getting into a retail business, I think there's a few words of wisdom here, just so you know what you're getting into. How long have you been, what made you get into beef jerky and cheese?
Well, actually, can you let go of my arm now?
No.
Because it kind of hurts. You've had it behind my back for an hour about this. What made me get into that? You know, I guess quite honestly, it was, two or three years ago. You know, I have a son now. He's 7 years old. And, you know, I want to make sure, you know, that I have him taken care of if anything ever happens to me. So I guess I'm being a mature adult in this mind thought process or whatever. But I started looking at the TV stuff. And yeah, I do well with, you know, my TV show, Wild Pennsylvania in Pennsylvania. You know, I do the radio stuff. I do the show for F&T, the Freedom Outdoors show that runs nationally on trapping. But that's more of a, you know, make money now, pay your bills now type thing. There's really not a residual monetary value with that. And, you know, you're not getting a 401k. You're not getting a pension from it. And it's something that I enjoy doing. And you know, I do well at it. But I started looking, you know, I spent a lot of money over the last 10 years through my TV show where, you know, airtime, just airtime, I've probably spent anywhere from $1.5 or $1.7 million to promote that brand. And I really don't, I mean, you don't see a lot of ads from me. I don't sell a lot of, I mean, I make lure, but I don't have time to make lure like you do. You know, it turns into a full-time job for you, I'm sure. So I just was like, you know, what can I brand that's something that the public is interested in? And you know, I could do game calls. And I do game calls. And I have my hats and my T-shirts and things. But I wanted something that was not only attractive to the outdoor community, but attractive to the public. And I went to four or five different shows as a featured speaker around the Pennsylvania area, the Harrisburg show that the NRA does now, you know, smaller shows in Altoona, the Jaffer Shriner show, you know, a lot of different little shows. And it just so happened that I was set up by somebody selling beef jerky at every one of these shows. And I had my best friend with me who helped me out on those weekends work my booth. And when we left the third or fourth week, I was like, man, do you see how much jerky that old guy sold? And he's like, yeah. He goes, you got to get into beef jerky. And that's really where it started about 2 years ago. And, you know, here we are today. I'll be opening up a retail store here starting on Black Friday of this year.
Cool. So the reason that's interesting me, and I'm not going to make you lie to me and say that you listen to all the shows, so we're not even going to go there because I know you're too busy running around the country with a camera. But some of the stuff that, when I got started into trapping, you know, I wanted to have a business and everything that's built inside of trapping. And it's either I got older, wiser, or more confused. I'm not sure which one it is. I've come to the conclusion, and we've talked a lot about this on the radio shows, I think a trapper's better off, honestly, to have a business that's not inside of trapping so he can go enjoy trapping instead of... 'cause like the trap I'm in now, I mean, I always tell everybody, I've got the most unusual fur shed, the lure shed in the world.
Yeah, you think?
But...
Thanks for the tour also.
Oh, you're welcome. But the controlling factor, you know, when I was making, you know, like most people, you sell a lure and you might make, probably on average a lure maker makes, you may disagree or agree, but most lure makers probably put it in their pocket at the end of the year, maybe $5,000-$10,000.
So, I think that's probably right on the money. I mean, I think a lot of times with this, let's go back to your, you know, doing something outside of the industry. I think you're absolutely right with that. Because once you take your passion and you turn it into a business, you basically take your passion, you turn it into your job. And that is something that it takes a very strong-minded individual to do, and it's not as easy as it's said. You know, I love trapping. We've had numerous conversations. You know, like I really enjoy trapping. It's been my passion since I was 7 years old and caught my first muskrat. And you know, any free time I've had to do it, whether it was through my baseball career or through this TV stuff, I try and do as much as I can. With the TV show, with the Freedom Outdoors show, and being able to go around filming a lot of trappers, I kind of live vicariously through them when I'm there. watching them make the sets, and it's almost like I'm making the set and I'm catching the fur, even though I'm not. But when you get into the business aspect of it, I know that you showed me your facility today, and it's fantastic. I mean, you have a tremendous operation with your lures and you know everything that's set up over there. But it's a job, and it takes away a lot of time that you have to be out in the field. And I know that over time that gets to you, but you also have to provide for yourself and your family, and you have to, you know, do what's necessary to make money. And I've told people a lot, they're like, hey, I want to be a professional trapper and this, that, and everything. And I blatantly look at them, I go, no, you don't. I go, no, you don't. you may have that premonition. Yeah, you may think you do. You may have that premonition of Jeremiah Johnson or Jedediah Smith exploring the West back in the 1830s and 1840s, beaver trapping for a living. It's just not like that today. The markets are so volatile. You know, 1 year rats are $15, the next year they're two. One deer, you know, year you're getting $800 for a Western cat. The following year you're getting $300. You know, 1 year you're getting 70 for your coyotes. Next year you're getting 20 for your coyotes. So it's so volatile that you really can't quit that job and think that you're going to make money as a professional trapper. You have to do a numerous amount of things in today's society to, you know, do that. And I'm talking about, you know, salvaging the animal skulls, you know, finding a gland market, finding somebody to buy your porcupines, whether it's a Native American doing bead work, or you have to look and search all these markets out so you get the maximum value out of that animal, which in essence is only, it's fair to the animal because you're getting the total use out of that animal, but it's fair to yourself too, because but what happens is you have to work so hard to get to that point. And I'm not a professional trapper. I think a lot of times people see me on TV and doing the show and hosting and whatever. I'm not a professional trapper. I've been asked, hey, why don't you know, I make a couple lures for, you know, their family lures that have been passed down since my great-grandfather. You know, and I've been asked, hey, why don't you make them lures and we'll promote them and sell them. And I'm like, I don't have time. I just don't have time. There's only so much that you can do. But if you are going to be a professional trapper, I wish you all the best. And being able to travel with guys like, you know, to come film you and film a Liesl Roussod or a Gary Schumann or a Jeff Dunlap, these guys that really are living my dream. You guys really are living my dream. My dream is to do that. But with what I have that I do with the TV stuff, I don't have time. I don't have time to do it. And I actually envy you guys when I'm out there on the line and watching you guys, you know, trap, because, you know, in my mind, I was born in the wrong century. I should have been born in that 1810, 1820 range to where I would have just absolutely loved exploring in the 1800s, doing the beaver trapping in the West and going to the rendezvous and just everything. It's almost like that lore of the past is very attractive to me and my mindset.
I wonder how, though, attractive it was at the time. I mean, it was pretty brutal.
Yeah, I don't think Jim Bridger was happy when the bear mauled him and he crawled out of the woods like 3 weeks later and, you know, said, why'd you guys leave me? Well, we thought you were dead. I don't know if it was too attractive to him.
Well, yeah, and well, the reason I've went on this kick lately, more than anything else, about 16, 17 years ago, I was talking with Dave Edwards, and I don't know if you know him or not. Lure maker up from Allegheny. He's passed away since then.
Yep.
He's good friends with Charlie Dobbins, and he tried to get Charlie Dobbins to get bigger in the lure business earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie Dobbins told him that I don't want to set a trap for myself that I won't be able to get out of. And when he told me that, you know, I was young. I was trapping completely full time. I had like three lures in a beaver video, and you're scrambling and hustling all the time for money. And that just went completely over my head.
Mm-hmm.
Now what someone may not understand, once you get a lure business to the size where it's a real income producing business, you can't just walk away from that anymore. You know, it, like if you're selling $10,000 worth of lure, you can make that in a couple of weeks, basically, of labor over the summer. and have it sitting there. And if your wife sends it out in the wintertime, no big deal. So it worked out really good for me for a long time. I can't do that now because you got wholesale orders, which are big, and this, that, and the other. So sometimes when I want to be trapping, I'm either making lure or I'm doing it. And with you, you know, if you wanted to be a trapper, you've got the worst job in the world.
Absolutely.
Because you're running around the country. You're like a truck driver that films something when he gets there. You know, is kind of the way it seems like to me. Well, so you don't get to trap, even though you're in the industry.
You know, and I just told you the story when we were out there talking earlier today. Last year, I trapped one day because I needed to do a beaver trapping episode. And I needed to get out there. So we went out and we found some beaver. I made some sets. I caught two beaver. I got the footage. I showed the viewer how I make my sets. We showed them some success on the first night, which you know as well as I do. If you're on beaver sign, you're going to catch beaver. It's not that hard. You make a couple simple sets. You put a 330 in a channel. You make a scent mound or a bait set. You're going to have action with open water. And you know, as long as you know, it's no different with the water trapping and the land trapping. Bed your trap properly, you're going to have the animal there. But, you know, in essence, though, I did about 50 days of trapping because I filmed over a 50-day period. So I was out in it, but I just personally wasn't able to have the time to do it. And you know, just make a point real quick on your lure business and not just you, but somebody, you know, just thinking Jeff Dunlap or, you know, anybody out there that is a professional lure maker, that's no different than having a child. That it needs your it needs your care, it needs your guidance. You have to be hands-on constantly with it because that's the real big kicker, the point that you just made. You're going to get big wholesale orders. Now, are you going to have enough lure to cover somebody calling you and ordering 2 ounces of this and 2 ounces of that? Yeah, you get that out the next day, not a problem. But if an F&T or a Caven or a you know, Gerald Schmidt or somebody that has a tremendous amount of customers through the industry from their catalogs and things, you know, they may call you and order, well, we want 100 of this one and 150 of this one and 50 of this one, and or, you know, I don't know what the size of your orders are, but you know, next thing you know, you got a half a pallet going to somebody or a pallet going to somebody, and you can't just whip that up in one day. That's something you have to have some stock of, and that's what I mean by the whole, you know, kind of like having a child type thing. You have to be, and the point you made is absolutely right on. You have to have it ready to go because if you do not or cannot fill those orders, you not only lose that business, but you lose future business because they're going to be like, well, we can't count on this guy to get us our product when we need it. And the next thing you know, they're going to the next lure maker and promoting his brand as opposed to yours, and your sales are going to drop off. So, you know, when you do start a business, it's your baby. And you know, I guess coming full circle on the first question, the beef jerky came about through that process where my buddy said, hey, you gotta start selling beef jerky. And I did a tremendous amount of research. I had some criteria that I wanted for my product. And I researched the internet for probably 6 months off and on to where I needed it to be USA grown. I needed it to be made in the USA. I needed it to be a quality product. And I finally found a facility that would do it. And do it to my liking.
Like, do you give them a recipe for that?
There's certain recipes that go into it. I carry 6 different flavors of jerky. I carry the mild, spicy, jalapeno, honey, black pepper, and teriyaki. I carry those 6 flavors. And the beef sticks, I carry those flavors except black pepper. So I carry mild, spicy, jalapeno, teriyaki, honey, and I also have a beef and cheese. We also have a meat stick where we have actual pork in it as well. So it's pork, beef, and cheese. They're actually really fantastic as well. But the whole process has been about 2.5 years in the making to get to the where we're at now.
Have you been selling this online?
I have it on my website, alanprobst.com. That's actually that needs revamped a little bit. I got to shore up some of the pricing and add a few more of the products. But we carry 7-ounce, 8-ounce bags of sticks. We carry the 3.25-ounce, 15-ounce bags of jerky. We carry a bag of sticks, which is a 30-count, 10-inch long stick. There's 30 sticks that are 10 inches long. We carry a 50-count bag, which is 50 sticks, 6-inch long sticks. And then we carry another bag that's 120 count, where it's 120 of the 4-inch sticks. So we offer
an inventory nightmare.
Oh, it's a tremendous nightmare when it comes to inventory. I got just an unbelievable amount of inventory, you know, going into this store opening. And I not only added on top of that, but it's the Wild Pennsylvania Beef Jerky and Cheese Shop. So I'm in the process I have three different makers of Wisconsin cheese, getting it from the best cheese place in the world, Wisconsin. And I have three different brands of cheese. We have cheddar cheese, Swiss cheese, Monterey Jack, Gouda. We have a tremendous, and we got 8-ounce blocks, pound blocks, 2-pound blocks, 5-pound blocks.
Great.
And we're just in the process of getting that all set. But, you know, I thought I was going to get into this. Oh, this will be easy. No. It's in dealing with the red tape has been the biggest pain in the butt out of everything.
Well, see, what you don't know, because I'm not going to make you lie to me, is I did a show that you may find interesting. I think it was two shows ago. And it's a business plan for a trapper to make $1.2 million a year. And it's actually pretty simple. I don't know the red tape of it. I'm not interested in doing it, but I see it, and it's so simple. Or we watch TV. Now, the biggest thing that I've been seeing on there is natural pet foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody like me, when I was doing 1,100 beaver a year, I could feed a lot of dogs. And that's what I feed my animals here once season starts. And I can tell a big difference. So I was like, what do they sell this stuff for? And what does it take to process it? And if it was natural, if it was really natural and you just froze it, you wouldn't have to go through the canning process. And believe me, if you had 30 people that used your pet food, just 30 people every day, that's a $50,000 business.
Mm-hmm.
If you had 1,000 people, that's where the $1.2 million comes from. And it's something that we don't always utilize from our point of view. And it wouldn't be hard to get beaver nutria and bobcat carcasses and stuff like that anyway.
Well, that'd be all natural. Yeah, I never thought of that. You know, I mean, that's for somebody else in my eyes too. I don't have the time to.
Well, I mean, that's what you run into. But when you were talking about the red tape earlier, are you using any wild game at all in your, or is that just too much?
Well, the problem with the wild game is, over time, I do want to bring that in as a novelty item. Here's where we're at with it. Beef prices are an all-time high right now. So if you go into any convenience store, they're going to probably have Jack Links. Jack Links basically single-handedly created this market through the Sasquatch commercials. They have taken this market from I think $200 million industry in the early 2000s to it's about $1.4 billion a year right now, the beef snack industry. You know, really the only competition that they had at the onset was Slim Jim. Slim Jim kind of controlled the market on the beef snacks, but they didn't have the beef jerky. Jack Links took it to the next level, started producing the beef jerky. They also have the Slim Jim type sticks. But I got to give, you know, Jack Links credit for actually creating this market. Now, what they've done is they've actually shown people that it's a healthy snack, it's high in protein, it's low in fat, it's low in caloric intake. And it's something that can give you energy. And it's not just for the outdoorsman. Everybody used to think beef jerky, only hunters and you know, outdoorsmen or outdoors women would eat that. Nowadays, it's being promoted to bikers and hikers and kayakers and cyclists and all these different people, which has created that, you know, influx of funds into that industry. And if you go into a retail location, you're looking at anywhere from a $6.99 to a $7.59 retail on 3 to 3.25 ounce bags of jerky. And that's where I'm going to be in my retail range. But at this point in time, we don't know where beef prices are going to go. And that's something that you have to watch for, because as it correlates to the wild game now, for that same amount of jerky, like 3 or 3.25 ounces, for buffalo, venison, elk, those type of animals, you're looking at about a $19.95 retail, because it's such a higher priced meat. So it's more of a novelty item. Okay. And everything, you know, has to be USDA regulated and stamped and approved. Every package of beef stick, beef product, beef jerky, whatever we sell, has that USDA stamp of approval, and it has to be produced in a USDA regulated facility. That's where a lot of the red tape comes in. You start working with the Department of Agriculture. You got to get health permits. They got to inspect your facility.
Talk about some of the crap you've been through on your store. Because it's something. Someone's going to go into business, you need to be aware.
Well, absolutely. I knew I had to deal with the health department, and I knew I had to deal with permits and stuff. But, you know, one that I never even thought about was the American Disabilities Association. You know, I'm building, basically what I've done is built my store in this 900 or 1,000 square foot space that I have. I had an outline of how I wanted to look, and, you know, we had to build the countertop and everything else. You know, in dealing with the American Disabilities Association, you find out, well, the countertop can only be so high. And then, you know, you got to have a sign on the door that's in Braille for exit and all these different things.
And you didn't know where to put it.
I didn't know where to put it. So I bought the sign. It was like $7, a plastic sign. It says exit on it with a exit door. And then it's got Braille underneath it. So I didn't have it on the wall. And the guy comes by and goes, yeah, you can't have that sign laying there. That's got to be up. I'm like, well, I needed to know where to put it. Does it have to be 3 feet up, 4 feet up? I don't know where it needs to be for somebody that's blind that comes in here. And he's like, well, just put it there. And I'm thinking, well, that makes absolutely no sense.
And how would a blind person know where to feel anyway?
That's what I'm saying. It's all this bureaucratic red tape. And I have no problem. Don't get me wrong. You know, if somebody's blind, I'm not going to make them search out the exit. I'm going to be like, well, here, sir, let me help you, you know, or whoever's with them. Hey, you know, here, try this. I'm going to give them samples of everything. I'm going to be as kind as I can be to them to make, you know, their life as easy as it is in my shop. So the sign will never come into play because I'm going to be helping them. Mm-hmm. It was really weird. And then, you know,
but you had to pay them.
Oh yeah. I need $125 from you, sir. And then, you know, $350 for this. Well, then I was talking to the health department, and, you know, I'm not making anything there. I'm not cooking. It's all made in the 65,000 production or square foot production facility. I'm not making anything there. The only thing I'm doing is on those 30 count, 50 count, and 120 count sticks, I'm going to have stainless steel pans that I put them in and allow people to buy them by the pound as well, in case they don't want to buy a whole package. But since I have an open product, I need to have a 3-bay sink. The same thing that's in, like, full-scale restaurants to wash dishes. Now, I might wash those pans once a week because they're not going to get dirty inside a refrigerated cooler. But we'll take them out once a week just to clean them up, make them look respectable. But I need a 3-bay sink. Well, that 3-bay sink turned into a $1,200, $1,300 expense. You know, $700.
You had to have a grease trap.
I had to buy a grease trap for it. I'm not cooking anything, but it's mandatory through the code to have a grease trap. So I've had like $5,000 to $6,000 worth of, you know, these extra expenses that I had no idea I was going to have. So, you know, if you are going to start a business out there, whether it's, you know, trapping or beef sticks or making sandwiches or a panini shop, you better look into.
Or pet food.
Yeah. Or pet food. You need to look into, and I don't know how it would work with beaver and coon and things like that, wild animals. I don't even know how that would, I don't even know what loopholes you'd have to go through to get that done.
Well, I'm sure there's regulations. Well, I mean, if you've ever seen a commercial, I've got a friend that's cleaned up commercial pet food places. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be highly regulated.
And can you imagine the stuff that's going on in there as far as the messes and just You know, because what you know, I guess I feed my pets. My cat gets what is it, meow mix or whatever. Whatever's on the shelf is usually what she gets. I try to stay with the same food, so it's the same diet. But you know, that's got to be a pretty messy process. That might be right up there with the lure making.
Well, I'm sure it would be, but it would be. And what I was talking about more is just the local market. I have no doubt in my mind that if I made that type food and explained it to people that it was recycling something that was going to happen, and we respected the animals and we're using all of it, at the Chattanooga market over there, I could build probably a $50,000 to $100,000 business.
Oh, absolutely. And you know what? You know, getting back to talking a little trapping here, I mean, you know, anybody that knows me knows that, yeah, I got, you know, I mean... Some people, I think I say this sometimes, and they go, well, geez, you sound like an anti. Well, maybe I do when I say what I'm going to say here, but that's not the case. I'm a firm believer you were out there trapping, and you know whether it's coon, beaver, muskrat, mink, coyote, bobcat, fox, whatever. You got to be fair to the animal. You got to be fair to your quarry. And you make it as easy on them, whether it be shock springs and swivels for your, you know, canine sets, or drowning sets for your water animals. You know, we're using a renewable resource, but in essence, it's our job as sportsmen and sportswomen out there that are doing this. It's our job to be fair to the animal and make it as less, you know, traumatic for them as possible. Now, don't get me wrong. We're all killers at heart. You know, that's in our nature. We're out there. We're doing a service for not only the public, but we're doing a service for the native wildlife, too. And there is a cruel kindness when you go up and you take an animal out of the population. But when it's all full circle...
Cruel kindness. Did you just make that up?
No, cruel kindness. That's what it is. Yeah, cruel kindness. It's a cruel kindness. Yeah, it's cruel for that one species or that one animal that we're taking out of the population. But as a whole, it's very kind to the whole population because we're doing a service that, you know, as you know, you got human expansion and you got all these different things that are taking a lot of this habitat away from all of the critters across this country, except maybe vast areas in the Midwest and out west. But here in the East, you know, it's just booming. There's buildings going up, there's housing developments, and all of that takes away from that natural habitat. You got a carrying capacity, man. That's what Mother Nature allows for that certain point of land to produce and carry. And once you get past that, you're going to have distemper, rabies, all these different diseases, mange, that are going to decimate the populations. And these animals are going to suffer a way harsher death than possibly, you know, a trapper taking them out of the population. But that's exactly what it is. It's a cruel kindness. Cruel to the animal you're taking, in essence. But it's kind to the whole population as a whole, and that's what trappers do. Trappers are probably some of your most educated as to what life and death is within the animal populations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can take, I'll take, you know, I get in arguments with, you know, being in the hunting industry with TV as well. I do both, hunting, fishing, and trapping. I'll get in an argument sometime where, you know, you get some of these hunters that I'm talking TV people too. Oh, I shot a 150-inch buck. Let me tell you something. Biggest buck I ever shot is like about buck 25. And you know what? I don't care. I don't measure my manhood on how much antler a deer has. You can shoot a 110-inch, 5.5-year-old whitetail in Pennsylvania that's a hell of a lot smarter and more wary than any 180-inch buck in Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I will take... The point I'm trying to make here, I will take any trapper that's worth his salt as a trapper and put him up as an outdoorsman against any hunter in the country. Trappers go into an area, as soon as they look at a stream bed, as soon as they look at a field, as soon as they look at a fence row, they know exactly. It's just innate within a trapper to know that's where the animal's going to be. He's going to go right there. And that's where you put your sets. Put 3 sets in. You go back in the next day and you got a triple. That's what I was talking about right there.
Well, the thing about the antis is there's a farmer by the name of Mark Shepherd up in Wisconsin. And he grows basically pasture-raised, free-range pigs. Now, when you see him on YouTube, these pigs come up to him, and they're like pets. They're like my chickens back there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's rubbing their bellies. They follow him around. I mean, they're like pets. And people have asked him, how in the world do you take these things to slaughter? He goes, I give them the absolute best life that a pig is ever going to have. It's as happy as he can be a pig. He's got all the food and water and shelter he wants. He gets loving from us. People come by and pet him, and they only have one bad day. Now, wouldn't it be nice if the humans only had one bad day?
I like this guy already.
And, you know, when you think about that, and you're like, he's treating the animals there have a better life than humans do, the way that we normally have to go out. Or if you let them overpopulate and disease breaks out and different things like that, it's much, what'd you call it?
Cruel kindness. It's cruel kindness. Yep. And, you know, you look at this equation, it's just your whole existence as a human being depends on something else dying, okay? And that doesn't matter whether you're a meat eater or not. You know, I hear these vegetarians all the time making excuses like, I don't kill anything, I don't kill it. Yes, you do, because they had to plow up a 100-acre ecosystem to plant your tofu that makes you feel good about eating.
Mm-hmm.
And whether you are a vegetarian, a vegan, it does not matter. You, as a human being, your whole existence in life depends on something else dying.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to sportsmen, hunters, trappers, people of that nature, we have been able, or we have a different chromosome or gene that allows us to logically look at a situation and look at something that we do as a cruel kindness, not to beat a dead horse on that one, but as a cruel kindness. And we are able to step outside the box and separate our thoughts from our emotions. And when you can separate your thought process from your emotions, you can go out and do what is necessary. If you are an emotional person that lives their life via emotions, you're not going to be a good trapper, because there are times that you walk up on an animal and you've caught enough coyotes. You walk up on a coyote, he'll be the most docile creature to where you think you can pet him. He'll just look to just shy away from you. And that's obviously not the alpha dog, but you know, you could probably reach down and pet him.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll walk up sometimes and he'll be the alpha, and you don't want to get anywhere near him because he's going to tear you up. And you can see it in their eyes. Every animal's eyes you look into, you can almost see what type of a critter they are. Are they docile, or are they the alpha? But we as trappers and hunters are able to, basically interpret our emotions and our thought processes in different areas and allow us to do what we do, which ultimately, in the whole scheme of things, helps out animal populations.
Mm-hmm.
And our emotions do not stop that process, which a lot of other people's would.
Well, you know, to me, the amazing part of vegans and vegetarians, and since you're here, I mean, I'm sure you've noticed I've got crap growing everywhere.
Yeah, so. You got a tremendous garden out there.
So it's, you know, I'm all, and they're into that, and I'm into that, but where the confusion comes that I see from them is people don't realize, I think we have gave up or transferred our food to other people that we don't know. So we don't know where food comes from. We don't know how stuff is grown. Even an organic farm, and when you tell a vegan this, they get upset. You can either grow plants by one or two methods, and there's never been another one that's made, either through dead animals or oil. Plants are going to take one of those two things.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So even the organic fertilizer is made from blood and bones.
Yeah. You look at... Well, yeah, they don't like hearing that. They don't like hearing anything that takes away from their mindset that they're doing the world a favor. When quite honestly, they're not doing any favors to anybody. And they'll be the first people wearing leather boots, and they'll be the first people, wearing makeup. and wearing perfume, and you know, most of all of your makeups on the market now for women, they have essential animal fats and oils in them to give them their base. You take perfume. Your higher end perfumes pretty much all have skunk essence in them because skunk in nature is a great carrier. Mm-hmm. You know, minimal amounts, but they have what is actual skunk essence. So it goes back to the saying that your whole existence as a human being depends on something else dying, because it truly, truly does. It does not matter. It's just something that you have to... We are the predator. We are the top predator. Man mm-hmm. is the top predator. Embrace it. Embrace that you're at the top. And don't... You know, I look at this all the time. I don't have enough time in my day to worry about what other people are doing.
No.
I don't have enough time. If somebody, you know, if you want to marry a man and you're a man, more power to you, as long as you don't bother me. I don't care. It doesn't bother me. I'll use a saying that Andrew Wilkow uses all the time. If you want to put your manhood where another man evacuates his bowels, that's your prerogative. I don't want to do it. So with that being said, it doesn't matter what somebody else does, as long as it does not affect me or mm-hmm. my family or my inner circle, I don't care. But don't, in the same breath, take your viewpoint
and force it on me.
Don't enforce on me what I'm not enforcing on you. Because you think that you're more of a moral or higher ethic person than me when you're truly not, doesn't mean you have the right to push your views on me.
Well, most of the people that I've talked to that think they're so much higher moral, it seems to me they're so disillusioned about life and the real world that they just don't understand or see. They just can't see it. There's no such thing as a no-kill farm. If a groundhog is eating the soybeans that makes tofu, the groundhog's going to go.
He's done.
I don't care what farm it's on.
He's done. Whether it's vegan or not, he's gone.
Yeah.
There'll be no Caddyshack dancing at that farm. You know, there won't be no dancing groundhog. He'll be laying in a ditch somewhere because he's costing the farmer money. And
well, I bet you do get, I mean, I get a lot of stuff online, death threats and crazy stuff like that. Being in all three industries, I bet it is.
I have had, you know, people that call and scream and send me a scathing email, I kind of just blow off. I did get a death threat here about a year ago, probably, that kind of like made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. It was a guy with an English accent. And it was a message left on my phone at the office from a block number, obviously. They won't call you from a legitimate number. They'll call it from a block number. And it was just like, you know, in a British accent, Mr. Probst, you tough guy. You kill animals. Yeah, you're real tough. Well, your day's coming. You just keep your eye over your shoulder, buddy, because your day's coming. And, you know, it's kind of like, whoa, that's kind of... Because he didn't have any emotion in his voice. You know, if he calls and he's screaming and he's yelling, when he hangs the phone up, he feels better about himself. This guy was kind of freaky. That's really the only, you know, I've had numerous. So I average about one a month. That's about the average. And I usually blow them all off. But that guy about a year ago, he kind of like, okay, I'm going to have to start carrying my .45 everywhere.
Well, I think that should be anyway. One of the funniest things that I saw was... We had a thing on Trapping TV that was on Facebook. Brandon Johnson was putting up, and somehow we got on the target of Anti-Fur Society, which is based out of England, but then I come to find out they have an office in Maryland, which makes me think they're somehow combined with PETA.
Because
they're really nuts. I mean, the if the kid is trapping, it's child abuse, and the parents should be killed, and the kid should be killed. Yeah. And you're reading this going, what kind of human being?
Yeah, they're just
that thinks this. Well, they Mike Seaton tried to have a logical conversation with them on there.
And you can't.
No, you can't. And finally, one of them said, "Well, when I'm standing in front of you, we'll just see how big of a man you are." Now, I know Mike Seaton. Mm-hmm. You know, Mike Seaton is like, I'm a ranger from the 82nd Airborne. Mm-hmm. I've been three tours of combat. So when you want to stand in front of me,
come stand in front of me.
That's what he said. Come stand in front of me. And that kind of locked that post down for a while.
Well, you know, it was just some little worm probably mm-hmm. about, you know, he's vertically challenged and he's pissed off at the world because he is vertically challenged. And this is his mission in life. His mission in life is to protect the animals because nobody protected him, I guess. You know, and you know, I don't begrudge. Don't get me wrong. I do see where somebody can get into that mindset of protecting animals. I really do. I am not a heathen to where I can't see the emotional connection to, oh my God, I can't believe you did that to one of God's creatures. I can see that. I don't condone that line of thinking, or you definitely don't go into, you know, you know, kill you and the kid. But I can see, even though they're wrong, I can see where they're coming from, that side of the equation. But what it comes down to and what it boils down to, and not getting political with it, but you take, that's a disease in that person's brain.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, truly is. And, you know, you were talking about the in Maryland and with PETA. You know, you got PETA down in Norfolk, Virginia. You got the ALF and the ELF, the Animal Liberation Front and the Earth Liberation Front, which are terroristic. They're on the FBI's terroristic
Absolutely.
Organizations. You also have the Humane Society, which is probably the number one monetary force that we have to fight with. They have about $150 to $170 million a year in donations. You know, they put the TV commercials on. I mean, you got to be a pretty heartless soul to be watching TV at midnight. And when they bring on Sarah McLachlan's song, mm-hmm. and you see these puppies that have been beat to hell, and you see these poor cats and strays, you got to be pretty much a heathen not to be like, oh, that really sucks for those little animals. But you also have to be able to step outside the box, and it's just not like that everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And animal use is not a bad thing. It is what it is. It goes back to the, you know, nothing, you know, but a human's existence is dependent upon animals and animal use. One last thing, one point to drive this home, which shows you the mental disease of these antis so much, is that you can take probably 99 to 99.5% of these people and ask them two simple questions. Are you against trapping, hunting, and fishing? They're all going to say, you're absolutely right. You should never kill an animal, da 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 da. And then you ask them this follow-up question right here. Do you believe in abortion?
Mm-hmm.
And about 99 to 99.9% of them will say yes. So their moral compass is so skewed that they feel for that animal as opposed to that human fetus being aborted. Well, it's a mother's right to choose. Well, I understand your thought process there, but you're putting an animal over a human being. You are so ass backwards with your thought process that I am now dumber from even looking at you, and I cannot continue this conversation. That's how I end these conversations with antis most times. What's your view on abortion? Well, I think it's a woman's right to choose. Well, you're an idiot. Here's why. And I give them about two sentences of that, what I just said. There is no comeback to that. What does somebody say to you when you say to them, your moral compass is so skewed that you put more value on an animal's life than a human's life? Your parents should have used the right to choose. That's what I tell them. They got there is no comeback to that.
Well, I mean, a lot of those posts from the Anti-First Society was, you just need to go and kill the kid because she's going to be so screwed up for society.
Exactly. It's amazing.
It's a 12-year-old
girl. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's a 12-year-old girl, or a boy, whoever, doesn't matter, little boy or little girl out there with his parents or his father or his grandfather doing an outdoor activity, a sport, learning about life and death, learning about when you pull the trigger on a gun that something has a chance of dying, which means when they're 20, their chances of shooting somebody is slim to none because they understand the consequences mm-hmm. of pulling that trigger. They're not sitting in a house with four other little rugrats at 8, 9, and 10 years old playing the video games where you're out shooting people and this and that and the other thing where it's just a video game. That's the problem with society today. There aren't enough kids out hunting and fishing and trapping.
because they don't know learning the consequences.
Because they understand consequences. They understand that, hey, when I point this gun at something and I pull the trigger, it's going to die. And
it's not going to be pretty.
It's not going to be pretty. And you start, you know, glamorizing these video games, whatever they are. I mean, they're just, you know, ridiculously graphic and whatever. And, you know, you got 8, 9, 10-year-old kids playing these games. That's built in them. That's in their mindset. In their, you know, years of learning at that age, it's ingrained in their brain. Oh, I can shoot anything. It's just a video game. No, it's not a video game.
You just hit reset. It comes
back. You just hit reset. Oh, I can start over. Well, there's no starts over when you shoot somebody. You know, and that's why, you know, the prison population is out of control. Because, not just because of video games, but because our moral society has gone downhill. You know, take God out of the Pledge of Allegiance. What is wrong with people? This country was founded on God, guns, and morals. And ethics and loyalty. And all of those things seem to be the progressive left and liberal society is taking those things. And I don't want to get off too much politically, but it all comes full circle back to what we do when it comes to hunting and trapping mm-hmm. and animal use. Those mindsets of those people, because they are so skewed morally, they look at what we do as inhumane, but they don't have a problem with abortion. It's just so mind-boggling to me that they have that strong of opinion for an animal, but don't for a human being, and we deal with it on a daily basis.
Well, to me, one of the most confusing things to people when they talk to me, because of the other activities that I do, if someone gets on to me for trapping, and you want to talk about, you know, okay, you see how if you're what I affer as abusive of animals, you want to get me fired up, start talking about the industrial way we treat chickens and cows and pigs. To me, I think our great-great-grandchildren are going to look back at that, and we're going to be shamed for the way we treat those animals. To me, it's sinful.
I
But that same person
agree.
That'll judge me and you will go to Walmart or Publix, and they'll buy that pack of chicken and look down their nose at us when they're supporting something that they would never, ever put up with if they could actually see it or smell it.
It is so amazing how the media, and I know this is trapping talk, but we're getting into the philosophy of our mindsets. You're kind of on the same wavelength I am with this stuff, and you are absolutely correct. I don't know if you've seen the thing on Facebook where some woman said, why do hunters go out and hunt for their food when they can just go to the supermarket where they make it?
Yeah.
I mean, for you to write a letter to the editor and have, you are meh, you're a sheep.
Well, you're just so I think people are just so disjointed from what. I guarantee you, I've had trappers over here, and I'm not going to mention names because I don't want to embarrass anybody, that has never, ever had a ripe strawberry off a plant.
Never.
Didn't know what it looked like.
Oh, my.
You know, I mean, outdoorsmen didn't know it could taste that way.
Oh, they're fantastic. And blueberries and blackberries and all that stuff.
All that's here, yeah.
I used to go blackberry hunting all the time in Pennsylvania. You find a blackberry bush, take a bucket, pick every damn one of them off. Don't leave any for the bears. Fend for yourself.
But I mean, this society in itself is I mean, because it's hard for someone can't understand why I would get so upset about what I saw in trapping in New Mexico at a feedlot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never felt so sorry for thousands of animals in my life as I'm running a trap line and killing
mm-hmm.
coyotes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had me up. I just, the first time I ever saw it, I was like, that is sinful.
The one thing that bothered me, which really wasn't a physical torture to the cows, was the mental torture when they take the calves from them and they keep them in pens separated because they need to get the calves away from the moms. And it's like a week's worth of meh.
You want to go help.
I want to go open the damn gate and let them go back in. It's like, you know, but you know what? I can emotionally step outside of that and understand, hey, that's the way it's got to be done. They got to wean them. But, you know, that it just goes back to what I said, you know, maybe 10 minutes ago. We're not heartless bastards.
We're not really.
We're not. We are not heartless bastards. Yes, just because we use animals and we go out and trap and we hunt and we fish and we use that renewable resource for our own nourishment and protein and we get a sense of respect from doing that, but not only do we get a respect from living off the land and doing it ourselves and not, you know, kind of fending for ourselves and not worrying about the Publix or the Wegmans or whatever making our cut of meats for us, we ultimately respect the animal as well. When we kill an animal, there's not an animal that I kill, whether it be through trapping, hunting. I don't keep a lot of fish because I'm not a big fish eater, so I throw them back, but when I kill something hunting or trapping, I don't have a problem with it because I know that I respect that animal, and that animal, deep down, if there is a higher power for animals, can look down and go, you know what, that's a lot better than not doing what that person does. Not, you know, there's nothing more to me. There's nothing more just mentally annoying to me than somebody getting on me, like you just said, about hunting and using the wildlife and fending for myself, and then going to the grocery store and picking their meat up out of a grocery, you know, cooler. That is so annoying to me. You have the balls and audacity to say to me that I'm disgusting because I kill my own food and I'm not against gutting my own animal and cutting my own animal up for my food source. And then you go to the store and you look down, like you said, look down your nose as you're picking up the chicken and the pork and the steak, thinking, oh, I'm better because I get my food here. You're an idiot. You're an idiot at best. And I obviously don't have a problem calling them idiots. I tend to piss people
somehow,
off.
Somehow I don't think that you would.
Well, I like to stir the pot per se once in a while on Facebook. Like if I see something on Fox News where some idiot says something from the Democratic Party, I tend to see how many friends I can lose on that daily basis. Or not, you know, friends. They're friends on Facebook, but I air quote, I call them quasi friends. Real friends come help you move.
Mm-hmm.
Those quasi friends just—they need somebody else on their friends list so they can feel important. I couldn't give two cares how many Facebook friends I have, and like I said, I like to stir the pot once in a while politically and see where I stand with all the libtards that are frequenting the page.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left. What change the subject to a more fun subject? What's going on with the Freedom Brand show this year?
Freedom Brand Outdoors this year, F&T's Freedom Brand, or F&T's Freedom Outdoors. We're running on the Pursuit Channel again. We're doing 13 original shows. Last year we did 26, and it was just time constraints this year. We just couldn't get 26 done, but we got 13 originals. I'm here today with you. You're going to be doing the tip of the week every week again. We'll be doing, that'll be an embedded segment. We'll be doing a product spotlight again. I actually did all the product spotlights this year at the F&T facility, so you
That's
get
good.
To see that. Yep. Going over a lot of the Freedom Brand stuff, a lot of the products they're making, hatchets and machetes and a lot of different things now that you wouldn't think a hatchet and machete would work for you on the trap line, but you put a lot of snare cables up, you got to chop stuff out. It's actually a lot of different things there. We got Liesl Russo, who's going to be a big part of the program out in Nebraska and South Dakota doing coyote, bobcat. We're going to do a skunk show with him, a badger show. We've got Jeff Dunlap again, professional trapper from Michigan. We're out there with him on his road line and water line. We do a show on each of those. We got a couple shows dealing with the customer service guys from F&T, Harry Nessel. We got Tyler. We got a bunch of different guys showing them how they make their sets and got some nice catches there. Got Gary Schumann again. He's always fun to be with.
I bet
he is.
Yeah.
He's a character. He's a really cool guy. And Darren Freeborough doing some canine trapping in Pennsylvania this year. So All in all, it'll be good. I'm going to do a couple shows. Going to go out and try and get some predator hunting footage for the show, showing some Fox Pro collars and stuff, and maybe a coon hunt and a little bit on my trap line to shore up the show. But ultimately, we're just trying to not only educate and teach trappers some new techniques that might work for them, but you know what we're trying to do is get more people involved as well, and showing that hunter, that rancher, or somebody that, you know, maybe a homeowner that has some problems with some raccoons. Maybe, you know, they're eating their deer feed, and giving them a way to save money and give them something to do in the outdoors. But all in all, same premise, doing the trapping, traveling the country, and hopefully bringing a great product to the people out there on the TV show.
Well, cool deal, man. Now, your other shows, just quickly, how do they find those?
My Wild Pennsylvania show, that basically runs in Pennsylvania. I run on Root Sports out of Pittsburgh. If you do have DirecTV or Dish Network, it is available on those systems. And then I think I'm in about 3.4, 3.5 million households in PA on cable. Plus, I run the northeastern section, Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. I run the Lehigh Valley, Allentown, Bethlehem, State College, Elmira, New York, Erie, Harrisburg, and Altoona. I run their local regions with the show there. So we kind of double dip in those markets, where the Fox Sports or Root Sports out of Pittsburgh runs at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings, and then them other areas run at various times throughout the days on Sundays. One, you know, 9:30 at night, one 11 at night, one 7 in the morning. But we're on those different channels. So, but my website, alanprobst.com, alanprobst.com. We have, you know, coming at the first of the year, we'll have our new schedule, times, and everything on there. The beef jerky's there, the products, the DVDs, the lures, everything. It's all listed there. But it's you know, it's you know, you're in the outdoor lifestyle. You know what it's like to work in the outdoor industry, and you know, every time I step out the door and get out in the field, you know, that's my office, and it's I don't take it for granted. I look at it, you know, it's hard work, but I don't take it for granted, and I, you know, appreciate the opportunity that I get being out there in the woods every day when I'm out there. Now, that's not every day, because as you well know, there's a lot of editing and and graphics and computer work. But you know, I definitely appreciate you having me on the show. This is my second time, and we got a little off on some political stuff today, but that's good too, once in a while.
Oh yeah, I agree. Well, I appreciate it, man.
I appreciate it.